The last class where we spoke about Narada Muni, we want to get up to the present in the life of Narada Muni. What was the last thing that you remember that happened to him? Yes. Thank you. So Narada Muni just wandered. He just wandered, experiencing life. Did you want to also say something, Paul? Perfect life of a perfectly sincere devotee. So Narada Muni wandered from one place to the next. One day he was in a good circumstance. The next day he perhaps was in a difficult circumstance. Then good, then another day good. And then maybe the tendency when you have 3 good days in a row to think, oh, the fourth day is going to be good. But it's not going to be necessarily. It may be, it may not be. But what Narada Muni was basing his life on was not the externals of the good or the bad, but rather on transcendental knowledge and his deep realizations of that knowledge, based on his bhakti. He was basing his life on the great rahasya, the greatest secret. And what is that? It's the prema, specifically prema bhakti. And just like a mother will see a shoe and she'll see that that shoe is not an ordinary shoe because it's her child's shoe. So similarly, one who has that type of love for Krishna sees everything in relationship with him, and that's the first of the Chatur Sloki verses, that Krishna, everything does indeed have a relationship with Krishna. Nothing in existence can be there and not have a relationship with Krishna. Because aham eva sam eva gre nanyat yat sadasat param. He exists everywhere, in all places, all circumstances. And if one sees something, oh, this shouldn't have happened, or this doesn't have a relationship with Krishna, know that to be maya, yes. So this keeps, that knowledge keeps our life very, very focused towards achieving the great, great secret of prema. And if one continuously and only has his mind on that, this is my goal, desiring it very intensely, then he goes through life. He'll according to his fate and according to Krishna's desire and how Krishna adjusts his karma, then he'll meet the ups and the downs, etc., but they don't actually act as obstacles for such a person. Rather, they simply make his desire to love Krishna burn still more brightly. Of course, it's easy to sit here and speak of this, and as we go through life, it's not easy to think in this way, but if we do learn to think in this way, jivatiyo mukti pade sadaya bhak, that this will cause us to naturally inherit the kingdom of God. Why? Because this is what we desire. And we're not distracted from anything else. So Narada Muni went through life understanding that life is a sadhana, practically speaking, a sadhana of service to be with Krishna in Goloka Vrindavan. And it's easy to check how we are doing in our life if we're achieving this, the goal of existence, using our life responsibly, by just seeing how these principles, how we are applying these principles. Are we seeing everything in relationship with Krishna? When we see things not in relationship with Krishna, we should recognize those as the influence of Maya. Do we have the spiritual goal burning brightly? And am I able to, is my sincerity so thick that I can intensely apply this to my life? And of course, when I look at my life, I see that no. You know, there are so many different lapses and lacks. There are perhaps even lacks of deficiencies. But then I have to take little steps closer. What is practical for me? And that is the mark of sincerity, is to always be making the attempt to move towards the ideal. We cannot jump, perhaps. Some of us may have that great ability, that sincerity and that purva sanskara, is to jump from, like Narada Muni did, and want to jump forward so quickly and absolutely. We may not be able to do that. One time I did that exercise amongst devotees, a smaller number of devotees in New Zealand. And one devotee, after doing that exercise with the post-its, I asked him, what baby steps can you take towards achieving your deepest spiritual goal? And he told me that his wife was very, very, very ill. His daughter was very, very, she had a very serious physical problem. And he had to work in a hospital also. And there was actually nothing he could do in a practical way. His life had fixed him in such a practical way that he couldn't even take a baby step to change anything. So that's the looking at the snapshot of his life was very valuable. Because he saw his circumstance, a complete picture of his circumstance in such an accurate way, and saw that he was not a free man at all. But does that mean one can do nothing at all? Maybe one can't actually do anything on a practical level. But if one, even in that circumstance, can desire, oh, look at my fate, look at my karma. I cannot do anything to increase my service, to increase my love, but only by Krishna's mercy, if I could love Krishna more. Only if I could love Krishna. Only if I could chant better. That type of lamentation, that type of only if my heart was more pure, only if I could love Krishna, only if I could be fixed in my loving service to Sisi, Radha, and Krishna and Vrindavan. That desire, even if we can't do anything on the practical level, is glorious. It is glorious. And in one sense, it is no different from actually doing it. Because the accomplishment of something is not in our hands. The desire is in our hands. So we don't want to overemphasize this point, because then we may sit back and think, I'll just sit back and desire to be better and I don't have to do anything. But no, but a true and sincere desire. And of course, we know that we can't trick Krishna, because if anyone is tricky, it is Krishna. He is the most tricky. He is bahut chalu. He's the supreme. He's unlimitedly tricky, we can say, even as he's unlimitedly beautiful. But if we sincerely are trying our best in service, in desiring, and lamenting our deficiencies even, that causes, this is all illustrated in the life of Narada Muni. Let us hear more. So Narada had gone through the deep and dangerous, fearful forests, which were the play yards of snakes, owls, jackals. Thus traveling, this is text 14, I felt tired, both bodily and mentally. And I was both thirsty and hungry, so I took a bath in a river lake and also drank water. By contacting water, I got relief from my exhaustion. After that, under the shadow of a banyan tree in an uninhabited forest, I began to meditate upon the supersoul situated within, using my intelligence as I had learned from the liberated souls. As soon as I began, this is 16, as soon as I began to meditate upon the lotus feet of the personality of Godhead, with my mind transformed in transcendental love, tears rolled down my eyes. And without delay, the personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, appeared on the lotus of my heart. So he was trying. The parallel in this, in one sense, is every day I sit down and to chant my japa. Something like that, because our practice is not Ashtanga yoga and to try to capture Krishna through meditation. But then suddenly, as we tried our best, as our practice always was, to chant attentively and to chant with some longing for service to Krishna, suddenly, by Krishna's grace, he entered our heart. Because, and look what it describes of Narada's mood, that first, before Krishna appeared on the lotus of his heart, his consciousness was transformed by ecstasy. So before, by prema, and that is what attracted. This is Krishna to appear in his heart. This is also described by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur the first births, there were seven births prior to Krishna's, six births prior to Krishna's birth, and they were all killed. All the children within the womb of Devaki, they died, they were killed. And this is Kam, Krodh, Lobh, Matsarja, Moha, and one other, Mada. And then when they were killed, then Baladev entered. Baladev is the Sandini Shakti, the Dham, entered. And then, so not only does purification have to take place, purification means the absence of impurities, but that is necessary but not sufficient. And then the holy Dham has to enter our consciousness. That attracts Krishna. And then the pulling of the ecstatic love of the devotee in the holy Dham, in the purified heart, in the Dham of the heart, which sits upon the purified heart, then Krishna comes. So he appeared on the lotus of the heart of Narada Muni. He actually came, Shakshat Darshan, text 17. What would it be like to have Krishna within one's heart, in one's the Dham of one's heart, when one's heart is purified? What ecstasy appears. At that time, O Vyasadeva, this is text 17, being exceedingly overpowered by feelings of happiness, every part of my body became separately enlivened. Being absorbed in an ocean of ecstasy, an ocean of ecstasy. An ocean means it's unlimited in size. And another quality of an ocean, it is unlimited in depth. And it wasn't an ocean of salt water. It was an ocean of ecstasy that Narada was drowning in. He became absorbed in that. And in that, experiencing directly Krishna, he lost any feeling of being different from Krishna, but not in the sense, of course, of he became one with Krishna, but he became, that's like when one is in, so much in love, one can't experience the difference between oneself and the object of love. There's the most divine oneness occurs. So swimming and drowning in this ocean of ecstasy, Narada Muni, all his senses were wild in ecstasy, each having a life of their own. And he was swimming and drowning in this ocean of ecstasy. And he lost any consciousness of any difference between him and Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There's an explanation of written by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in Madhurya Kadambini of what it's like. He gives us an experience by reading what his words, what it is like to actually have Sakshat Darshan of Krishna when one is a lover of Krishna. And that explanation is incredible. How he sees Krishna, he just falls to the ground, he rolls on the ground, he's crying out Krishna's name, and he's praying, oh Krishna, previously I compared you to your complexion to a rain cloud. Now I see that was completely wrong, completely shallow, because it was my conception of a rain cloud of this world. And I compared your beauty to something of this world, but now experiencing the actual transcendental effulgent complexion that is emanating from your body and your beauty, now I see everything I had previously thought completely shallow. And he falls to the ground in ecstasy, and then Krishna disappears. And he rolls on the ground and he's calling out. He cannot tolerate it. He cannot tolerate for a moment being separated from Krishna, because he's just experienced what it's like being with Krishna. And then Krishna comes again and disappears again. And tears are just simply pouring from his eyes. And he's living, and he describes it, that Krishna's coming and going from his consciousness in this way, and he loses control of his own life, and then he cannot even notice the point when he's leaving his body. This is love for Krishna. Leaving the body became completely inconsequential as he was drowning the ocean of love for Krishna, with its different waves of meeting and separation. So Narada Muni at this point is drowning in this ocean of Krishna being present fully in his heart. And then text 18. The transcendental form of the Lord as it is satisfies the mind's desire, and at once erases all mental incongruities, all this problem, that problem, this desire, this frustration, com- completely finished. Because ultimately, there's only one way to unentangle oneself from the complexities of material existence. We act practically, but we also know that the very nature of material life is like a complete, it's like Velcro. You know, when you put the two sides of the Velcro together, every piece gets entangled with another piece. And there's only one way is just boom. And by the presence of Krishna, prema bhakti, it's all finished. It's all finished because it's seen for what it is having nothing to do with us. Because we're in love with Krishna. And that's another trick of Maya, also the tendency, I have to really remove this little piece of Velcro and this little way over here and unentangle myself in that way and move this little unentanglement in this way and just get a whole consciousness completely entwined in Velcro consciousness or something, you know, that we're just trying to unentangle us. But really the methodology is much more the positive, the attraction to Krishna. Much more. So, and then, and Prabhupada, the verse here states in 18, in such a very simple way. So he's described how the mind, the soul, me, is completely satisfied in the ecstasy of being with Krishna. And then upon losing that form, I suddenly got up. So suddenly Krishna disappeared from his heart. Because he had appeared there by his causeless mercy, not by the endeavor that he was performing, just like some days I'm chanting japa and I'm struggling for my consciousness to catch Krishna's holy name. And then sometimes Krishna, by his mercy, just makes it so easy and he's right there. I mean, on my level of chanting. So by his free will, he acts. The holy name's free will, he acts. So similarly, Krishna suddenly disappeared from his consciousness. And how did Narada Muni react to that? He was fixed in his meditation, drowning in the ocean of Krishna consciousness. And Krishna disappeared. He suddenly just jumped up. Being disturbed as usual when one loses that which is desirable. He got up. 19. Immediately he's looking everywhere. What happened? I desired to see again that transcendental form of the Lord. But despite my attempts to concentrate upon the heart with eagerness to view that form again, I could not see him anymore because Krishna did not come. Krishna does not come by our effort. Our effort is required. Our effort is required. But Krishna does not appear by our effort. He appears only by his causeless mercy. So Narada attempted to do the same mechanical practices that he always had done, and by this one, by Krishna's mercy, had come, but to no avail. Krishna would not come. I could not see him anymore. And thus, dissatisfied, I was very much aggrieved, complete distress. Srila Prabhupada's purport. There is no mechanical process to see the form of the Lord. It completely depends on the causeless mercy of the Lord. We cannot demand the Lord to be present before our vision, just as we cannot demand the sun to rise whenever we like. The sun rises out of his own accord, so also the Lord is pleased to be present out of his causeless mercy. One should simply await the opportune moment and go on discharging his prescribed duties in devotional service of the Lord. But the desire to be with Krishna, how could Narada Muni's consciousness not be filled with desire to again be with Krishna? How impossible. He's tasted now. Narada Muni thought that the Lord could be seen again by the same mechanical process which was successful in the first attempt, but in spite of his utmost endeavor, he could not make the second attempt successful. The Lord is completely independent of all obligations. He can simply be bound. He can simply be bound up by the tie of unalloyed devotion. Nor is he visible or perceivable by our material senses. When he pleases, being satisfied with the sincere attempt of devotional service, depending completely on the mercy of the Lord, then he may be seen out of his own accord. Please listen to that sentence again, because this sums up the entire process. When he pleases, being satisfied with the sincere attempt of devotional service, depending completely on the mercy of the Lord, then he may be seen out of his own accord. What word struck you in that sentence? What word was the heaviest or most strong word?
When he pleases.
Okay, then what word? That's his side. When he pleases on his own accord. That's how he reciprocates. Now what word comes from what is our?
Sincerity.
Yes, this, huh?
Sincerity.
Both those two, but the one that struck me is sincere. And sincere, that means honest. The word sincere is very difficult to define. What is the Hindi or Marathi word, or what word is the Hindi word for sincere? And how would you define that in English?
Honest.
Actual honest. And what's the opposite of sincere? It's easier. That one's easier, huh? Dishonest. But what? Insincere. Okay. What's another? Yes, duplicity, hypocrisy. Yes, Krishna, I really want to be with you, but not really meaning it at all. The opposite of sincere. And that other quality, which is also part of our responsibility, the causeless mercy appearing by his sweet will, that's Krishna's part. But the sincerity and the complete dependence on Krishna is our part. And again, as we spoke of in the Japa classes, what being completely dependent on Krishna, gotripte varanam tata, does, being surrendered to Krishna, what that does is gives us a sense of belonging to Krishna. Being dependent makes us feel that we belong to him, included. In the category of those that Krishna has to take care of, otherwise we have no hope. Not that we don't do our work, and not that we don't act, but what we don't do is think that it rests in my hands. Even for our own advancement in Krishna consciousness, especially for our own advancement in Krishna consciousness, we sincerely do what we can do, what we are supposed to do, but fully depend upon Him, His causeless mercy. We struggle to serve, to make our offerings with a sincere heart, just so that Krishna will be pleased. That's the struggle. And then how Krishna wishes to reciprocate with us, that depends upon His sweet will. Now, very soon I will read a very important purport of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's in this regard, but not quite yet. So Narada Muni was distraught in so much anxiety because he, just like what can we describe it to? You know, it's like for the stock market people, if suddenly they're all the whole portfolio, every stock in their portfolio, just like, you know, went through the ceiling. All of a sudden. And you know, oh, what ecstasy! And then you call up your stockbroker and tell him how happy you are, and then he tells you, oh, we happened to sell all those stocks yesterday. Sorry about that. And then there's no meaning to life anymore. So what does one do in those circumstances? Practically, when one gained something of the greatest value, and of course, what's valuable to one person depends on his heart. What's the quality of his heart and heart's desires? So when one has the purest of hearts like Narada Muni, and then he gains Krishna, and then Krishna, by his causeless mercy and free desire, vanishes, and Narada Muni is completely distraught, completely in anxiety, and he feels like he has nothing, and all he can do is try again and try again and try again, because that's all he knows what to do. Text 20. Seeing my attempts in that lonely place, the personality of Godhead, who is transcendental to all mundane description, spoke to me with gravity and pleasing words just to mitigate, remove my grief. What does grief mean specifically? Sense of loss. When a dearly beloved leaves this world, there's grief. A sense of loss, an emptiness, a sinking feeling in the heart. Narada Muni, after being swimming in an ocean of transcendental ecstasy, was now swimming in an ocean of transcendental grief. And then Krishna, with deep gravity, spoke to him. Text 21. This is Krishna's word. These are Krishna's words. There's 1, 2, 3. Four verses that Krishna spoke to him. Hantasmin janmani bhavam. Oh, hanta is a very affectionate way of addressing another. O Narada, hantasmin janmani bhavan mamam drastum iha arhati. In this life, in your whole life, you will not see me again. And the word drastum, namam, you will not drastum see me. But iha arhati, arhati means deserve. You do not have the qualification. You do not deserve to see me again in your entire life. Avipakwa, you are not mature enough. Kashayanam, and there are still some impurities in your heart. Dudarshoham kuyogina, incomplete in service. Now this verse is actually quite deep and meaningful. I'll read Prabhupada's translation. O Narada, I regret that during this life you will not be able to see me anymore. Those who are incomplete in service and who are not completely free from all material taints can hardly see me. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that actually this doesn't apply to Narada, because the Lord has said those who are incomplete in service and who have contaminations in the heart cannot see me, but the Lord had just come and visited his heart. So this applies to us. Or, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, this was simply to increase Narada's humility. At this point in Narada's development, where Krishna was so attracted to his sincerity and purity, he would come personally and visit his heart. Still, he wanted to increase his humility. Because as Srila Sanatana Goswami explains in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, that humility and prema are the same. The more deep one's humility is, the more one has prema. And on the other hand, the more proud we are, the less love of Krishna we have the capacity to live within. So something that just a little tangential to that. The thing about pride, we should see it as such an obstacle. Such an obstacle. And it is not the kind of obstacle that you pick it up and put it away and it's done with. It's the kind of obstacle that you pick it up and put it away and you look back and it's grown again. You become proud. Look, I got rid of my pride. And he hasn't. He hasn't. There was once, I may have mentioned this in the japa class, that there was one powerful sadhu who was time to leave this world, and his disciples asked him who will be the next acharya after you leave. And he said, you'll be able to recognize him by how he has conquered pride. He wouldn't mention any names. So after the acharya left, they went around asking, How can you conquer pride? How can you conquer pride? How can, and so many people said different, gave different prescriptions. And then they asked one who said that pride is something that I'm going to have to fight with every single day of my life. And they accepted him. That is the nature of pride. Because the mind is so tricky. It, just as an expert devotee can take anything of the material world and spiritualize it. And that was such a gift of Srila Prabhupada's, that he saw, his vision was so great that everything, everyone, anything, anyone had a place in his incredibly huge desire, a place of service in his incredibly huge desire to make everyone within the universe Krishna conscious. So a great soul like that can spiritualize anything. And people like me can take spiritual things and make them mundane based on pride and self-interest. Use the Hare Krishna mantra, the Hare Krishna movement for me. Well, try to do that. So these things, based on pride and lack of humility, they have to be fought with every day of the life. And on the other side, humility should increase and increase and increase and increase. And from what I understand, the easiest way to increase one's humility is to try and be pure. Because the more one sincerely tries to be pure, the more one is confronted with all the impurities. Like the light turned in the dark room, the light turned on in the dark room that hasn't been cleaned for 200 million births. And then you turn on the light and you look at your consciousness, and the more you push things away, it seems like the more subtle or even gross dirt becomes revealed. So without the sincere attempt to be a devotee, a servant, not even a devotee, a sincere, selfless servant of Sri Sri Guru and Gauranga, then one can never become humble. This is my conclusion. It is the sincere attempt that naturally, automatically brings humility to the heart. So Narada Muni was given very grave instructions, or grave, and it satisfied him too. I regret that during this life you will not be able to see me anymore. Those who are incomplete in service and who are not completely free from all material taints can hardly see me. Srila Prabhupada's purport. We'll read some of it. The personality of Godhead is described in the Bhagavad Gita as the most pure, the supreme, and the absolute truth. There is no trace of a tinge of materiality in his person. And thus, one who has the slightest tinge of material affection cannot approach him. Now, after reading that, I can see why many people don't like to read Prabhupada's books. Just read that. If you're feeling proud, read that. One who has the slightest tinge of material affection cannot approach him. The beginning of devotional service starts from the point when one is freed from at least two forms of material modes. This is the beginning of devotional service, namely the mode of passion and the mode of ignorance. Now that'll make me humble every time. The result is exhibited by the signs of being freed from kam, lust, and lobe, greed, covetousness. That is to say, one must be freed from the desire for sense gratification and the avarice, aversion for sense gratification. The balanced mode of nature is goodness. And to be completely free from all material tinges is also to become free from the mode of goodness. The contamination of the mode of goodness. Now that's one problem I don't have, to get free from that one. To search the audience of God in a lonely forest is considered to be in the mode of goodness. One can go out into the forest to attain spiritual perfection, but that does not mean that one can see the Lord personally there. One must be freed from all material attachment and be situated on the plane of transcendence. That means one has to be situated on the plane of wanting to love Krishna. Which will alone help the devotee get in personal touch with the personality of Godhead. The best method is that one should live at a place where the transcendental form of the Lord is worshipped, not even the mode of goodness in the forest. A neophyte, the temple of the Lord is a transcendental place, whereas the forest is a materially good habitation. A neophyte devotee is always recommended to worship the deity of the Lord, Archana, rather than go to the forest to search out the Lord. Devotional service begins from the process of archana, which is better than going out in the forest. In his present life, which is completely free from all material hankerings, Sri Narada Muni does not go into the forest, although he can turn every place into Vaikuntha by his presence only. He travels from one planet to another to convert men, gods, Kanaras, Gandharvas, Rishis, Munis, and all others to become devotees of the Lord. By his activities, he has engaged many devotees like Prahlad Maharaj, Dhruva Maharaj, and many others in the transcendental service of the Lord. A pure devotee of the Lord, therefore, follows in the footsteps of the great devotees like Narada and Prahlad and engages his whole time in glorifying the Lord by the process of kirtan. Such a preaching process is transcendental to all material qualities. So what is Prabhupada's stressing is the transcendental platform here. It's preaching. It's preaching, he's stressing. And to just give a hint of Prabhupada's vision, and this is very important for everyone, regardless of their position, whether the householders, working every day, brahmacharis, whatever. Listen to this point that Prabhupada made to myself and Jagatwini Mataji in the Philippines. It was right before a lecture that Prabhupada was about to give, and he was just sitting in his room, and he picked up some little piece of wood, a little that was on the desk in the room, and he just was holding it, and it broke, and he just began to laugh. He didn't say anything, but what we saw from his laughter was, just see the nature of things of this world, you know, breaking. And then he said, Okay, stop. It is my desire that all the souls, or every soul in the universe, go back to Godhead. And then he said, you please help me with this. So with a desire so big, do you think you can find something to do to help Prabhupada? Some service? That means including the ants, the mosquitoes, the human beings, the big human beings, the little human beings. There's some service for everyone. Maybe due to my situation, I can't do a big service, but the vision is so big, there's room for everyone to do something. And that will be pleasing to Prabhupada if we do that very sincerely, with dependence on Krishna. Very, very liberal, all-inclusive. Next verse. O virtuous one, you have only once seen my person. And now Krishna's going to explain why he did this incredible thing to Narada. Narada had been wandering, perhaps for years, experiencing life, desiring Krishna, desiring, keeping his mind focused on the purpose of his existence. And then suddenly, by his causeless mercy, Krishna came to him, and then, boom, he left. And Narada was distraught. And Krishna says, you have only once seen my person, O virtuous one, and this is just to increase your desire for me. And please listen to the next line of Krishna's words. Because the more you hanker for me, the more you will be freed from all material desires. The more the center, the spiritual desire, the central spiritual desire of our life, the more that hankering increases, the more the rest of our life is aligned towards that, the less the purification will automatically take place. Just like the more it is light, the less darkness automatically exists. So again, we want to make our spiritual center bright. And if we're not able to do that, at least we can desire to do that. But if we can't even desire to make our spiritual center bright, then some other part of our life is going to take over. And something that's meant to assist us in our journey back to Godhead will become a journey of its own, a distraction, an obstacle. So therefore, what to do to keep the spiritual desire in our life burning, or make it burn, or at least start it burning, or at least start the desire to have it burning? What to do? Oh, that's our whole process, is of sadhana and service. The preaching really helps. Chanting good japa really helps. Hearing from Srila Prabhupada, studying, reading his books really help. Worshipping the deity really helps. Associating with devotees really helps. this is what our whole life, or the best part of our life, is based on. The spiritual part of our life, it's based on these things, Panchanga Bhakti. But it all comes to this point of desire. What, and this question we should ask ourselves regularly, what do I actually want? What do I actually want? What do I want to place in the center of my life? And then when we ask the question, we should listen to our answer and see if it's really what we want, or see if some adjustment needs to be made, maybe not, maybe yes. That's for us to decide. What do we actually want with our life? And more or less the whole basic foundational preaching that we do is to tell people that they should use their human lives responsibly, different from an animal's life. Human life has a purpose. Atato Brahma Jigyasa. So what is it that I actually want? It's such a simple question, and simple to ask, and also simple to answer superficially. So Krishna appeared to Narada, who was already, in his case, on the platform of prema, and disappeared to increase his humility and to increase his desire, his hankering. Because everything is based on that, those two things, our humility and our hankering. Especially spiritual life. In material life, everything is based on, in one sense, one's hankering, but not one's humility, but one's pride, self-confidence, ability to bluff. The first bluff is the bluff of oneself, and they call that self-esteem, high self-esteem. And there is no illusion that is more hard to get out of than one's self-illusion, self-delusion. Third verse. I'll read some of Prabhupada's purport to this one. A living being cannot be vacant of desires. He is not a dead stone. He must be working, thinking, feeling, and willing. But when he thinks, feels, and wills materially, he becomes entangled. And conversely, when he thinks, feels, and wills for the service of the Lord, he becomes gradually freed from all entanglement. The more a person is engaged in the transcendental loving service of the Lord, the more he acquires a hankering for it. Because that is what we're really longing for. So interesting to read that a sentence like that. The more a person is engaged in the transcendental loving service of the Lord, the more he acquires a hankering for it. Now, Prabhupada is stating this absolute principle with such certainty, and then ask, is this true for me? Is it true for me? The more I've been engaged, the more I, more deeply I want to be engaged? Or do I get, I've done this now, and I'm, you know, and it's sort of the habit of my life. We want to be deepening our desire to love Krishna, deepening and clarifying, making it more clear who we are in relationship with Krishna. We want to develop love for Krishna. So this is the nature of godly service. That's what Prabhupada concludes is, this is the nature of godly service. The more one does it, the more one desires. By service of the Absolute Truth, even for a few days, a devotee attains firm and fixed intelligence in me. Consequently, he goes on to become my associate in the transcendental world after giving up the present deplorable material world. And then finally, he says, intelligence engaged in my devotion cannot be thwarted at any time, even at the time of creation, as well as the time of annihilation. Your remembrance will continue by my mercy. And this is what actually will happen when Narada leaves this world, leaves his body. He immediately is reinstated in a pure transcendental situation. Prabhupada's purport. Devotional service rendered to the personality of Godhead never goes in vain. Since the personality of Godhead is eternal, intelligence applied in his service or anything done in his relation is also permanent. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is said that such transcendental service rendered unto the personality of Godhead accumulates birth after birth. And when the devotee is fully mature, the total service counted together makes him eligible to enter into the association of the personality of Godhead. Such accumulation of God's service is never vanquished, but increases till fully mature. So what's the fully mature position of devotional service? Prema. Prema Pumarto Mahan. This is what is to be gained. Now, I'd like to read a comment of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's that especially struck me. This was to the 23rd verse. By service to the Absolute Truth, even for a few days, a devotee attains firm and fixed intelligence in me. No, I'm sorry. It's actually to... The more, O virtuous one, you have once seen my person, only once seen my person. You've only once seen me. And this is just to increase your desire for me. Because the more you hanker for me, the more you will be freed from all material desires. This is what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says. Seeing me once, so Narada was actually thinking naturally, but show yourself to me once more. I need that. I want to see you at least once more. And Krishna's reply, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, is, seeing me one time only, not many times, is enough to produce desire for me. By only slight increase in longing, prema will not develop to the state of youthfulness in a person having somewhat weak prema. My rule is that I show myself one time only to a person practicing in his present body, in his sadaka deha, who has developed prema. The infant state of prema in the sadaka's body matures to a youthful state in the Siddhadeya, by the increase of prema arising from longing in separation. That youthful prema allows the devotee to see me constantly and serve me directly. So that's half of the point that I found very important and for me is the increase comes from arising from a longing in separation. So therefore, what does separation mean? But what, okay, but practically, what does the word separation mean? You're not, yes, absence. Absence. But longing. Because there's a lot of people who I am absent from with no longing at all to be with them. Or neutral. But the process that Mahaprabhu taught and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is mentioning here, and Srila Prabhupada mentions in the Krishna book, as the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is separation. That means longing for what we don't have, what we want and don't have. So therefore, I stress, we need a spiritual desire in the center of our life, even if we don't have it. I want something, and even if I don't have it, we need it to be there so we can wish we had it. We can long to have it. We can hanker to have it. So wish is on this level, long is, hanker is on this level, and long for it, at least in English. I long for this. When will that day be mine when I actually have a deep desire to be in Vrindavan with Krishna doing some service? I don't have that now. But unless some form of the desire is in my consciousness, there is no question of even wishing for it, desiring it, wishing for it, hankering for it, or longing for it. And our process of sadhana bhakti that has been given to us is meant for this purpose, to increase our desires. And Krishna also comes to us in different ways and at different times, through kirtans, through the holy name, through the yatras, through the prayers to the deities, through the association of the devotees, through the Bhagavatam. Krishna sometimes comes to us, maybe not in exactly the same way that Narada had Krishna personally enter his heart. But practically speaking, on our own levels, it is the same way that Krishna comes and then he leaves. And how do we deal with that? Krishna gives us some mercy through the Dham, through devotees. Krishna empowers his devotees. They carry his Kripa Shakti. A devotee touches us. You ask 1,000 devotees why they came to Krishna consciousness, and almost always, I've only heard 2 answers to this question. Of course, everyone will say the prasadam. But in a serious mood, I've only heard 2 serious answers to this question. Why did you come? And it was first answer. They're both the same answer. It always points to a person, a devotee, who made a difference. Which is so interesting, because Because that means also that we also can help one person. We can also be instrumental. But it's always a person. And the other answer that I've heard to this is also a person, but it's Prabhupada through his books. I haven't heard any other answer other than prasad, which is also true. But then Krishna comes at different times of our life and different forms and gives us some special taste, something special, and then by his own, and our heart becomes filled with desire, it becomes filled with hope, and then why Krishna acts the way he does. I don't know, I never know, and I always have in my mind, and this is another confession type, I always have a much better idea of the way to do things than he does. And that leads us to the second point of the purport. Please listen to this carefully. After Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has explained the importance of separation, of having and then not having, listen to what he says. I alone, and not my devotee, I alone and not my devotee know the process of fulfilling the desires of my devotee. I alone and not my devotee know the process of fulfilling the desires of my devotee. That implies that Krishna is actively working all the time, at every time. But not according to my plan, according to his plan and his timing. Because he alone knows the process of fulfilling the desires of his devotees. Our business is the desiring. We called that yesterday a spiritual goal. But it's really, we want to set in place the importance of spiritual hankering. Maybe not on the highest level, but some spiritual hankering must be there. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. And that spiritual hankering should be the center of our life. And it should have something to do with pleasing Krishna and those dear to Krishna. And it should not have something to do with just pleasing me. And if we don't have a spiritual desire, then the just pleasing me desires must take over, even if it is to be comfortable in the mode of goodness. So he's, I know what to do. I am the doctor who knows just what to do, what medicine will cure you. Even the expert physician does not prescribe for himself. So what Krishna has done, as he directly says in this verse, I have acted like this. I have shown you once my supreme person. Only once, just to increase your desire for me, because the more you hanker for me, the more you'll be freed from material desires. You, who simply desire me, even without having seen me, will become free from all desires for material enjoyment. This statement does not actually apply to Narada, since he does not have any material desires, being at the level of prema already. By saying this, the Lord shows the nature of devotion. Additionally, and here is where Vishwanath Chakravarti makes this interesting point, the Lord increases the humility of Narada. He tells him something that's not exactly true, that Narada accepts as true. It's true. It's not true from the tattva point of view, but it's true from the rasa point of view. It's true from the tattva point of view because it's not true because he's already so exalted. There's no material. He's wandering around, no material desires. But from the point of view of the rasa, of the taste that he, what he wants from Narada, it's required. I like that purport of Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's. So, then the interesting question is, I'll read the next verse and then ask the interesting question. Then that supreme authority, personified by sound and unseen by eyes, but most wonderful, stopped speaking. Feeling a sense of gratitude, I offered my obeisances unto him by bowing my head. Purport. In this purport, there are valuable hints of how we can progress. That the personality of Godhead was not seen but only heard does not make any difference. The personality of Godhead produced the four Vedas by his breathing, and he is seen and realized through transcendental sound of the Vedas, through the transcendental sound of the Vedas. Similarly, the Bhagavad Gita is the sound representation of the Lord, and there is no difference in identity. The conclusion is, and when Prabhupada in his purport says, the conclusion is, it's time to listen very carefully. The conclusion is that the Lord can be seen and heard by persistent chanting of the transcendental sound. Kirtaniya Sadahari. So how did Narada react to this incredibly deep experience, deep, meaningful, grave? The Lord left, there he was. He had been wandering and wandering and wandering and wandering and wandering based on the instructions the Bhaktivedantas had given him. And then in that lonely, secluded forest, the Lord had come and entered his heart and then pulled himself out and disappeared. And then the Lord told him, you're not going to see me even one more time in this life. I've done this just to increase your hankering to see me, to be with me, to serve me, to love me. Narada had wanted, we've been talking about fortunate, unfortunate, fortunate, unfortunate. Was it fortunate that the Lord had visited his heart? Obviously, most fortunate. Was it fortunate then the Lord left? How could we say that was fortunate? But how could we say it wasn't fortunate? Because it was his prescription. Sometimes we don't like the prescription given to us. At least I can say that for myself. So this is, and then after having this incredible experience of Krishna entering his heart and then disappearing, and then the Lord personally coming, telling him, I've done this just to increase your hankering for me. And then the Lord disappearing. Just imagine how silent that forest must have felt to Narada. And then what do you do next? What did Narada do? Thus, and this is what he did, I began chanting the holy name and the fame of the Lord by repeated recitation, ignoring all the formalities of the material world. He just began chanting and chanting and chanting and chanting about the name, form, qualities, pastimes, glories of Krishna, ignoring what anyone thought. He just simply did not care anymore. It wasn't any indication that he cared before, but he did not care. He just in every place, whether it was an appropriate place, an inappropriate place, he was just mad. Hankering had increased to be with Krishna so much he could not stop. Because what did Prabhupada say in the last purport? That the name of Krishna, the form of Krishna, the pastimes of Krishna are the same as Krishna, and he wanted to be with Krishna. So he just, this is what Krishna gave him, the way that he could be with him by always chanting, and that's what he did, and he didn't care about anything else. Interestingly, our service, if our consciousness is right, is not different from Krishna too. It's not service in the sense of the English word, but it's devotional service in the sense of seva. If we can truly put Krishna in the center. So such chanting and remembering of the transcendental pastimes of the Lord are benedictory. So doing, being immersed in the chanting of Krishna's names, I traveled all over the earth, fully satisfied, humble, and unenvious. It is only when we are fully satisfied we can be unenvious. It is only when we are humble we can be fully satisfied. Purport. Important purport by Srila Prabhupada. The life of a sincere devotee of the Lord is thus explained in a nutshell, concisely, by Narada Muni, by his personal example. Such a devotee, after his initiation by the Lord or his bona fide representative, takes very seriously chanting of the glories of the Lord and traveling all over the world so that others may also hear the glories of the Lord. So we may not travel all over the world, but we may just travel to different parts of Bombay from our house to our office or something like that, or all over the city. But is it possible that we can do some service for Krishna and telling others? Is it possible that we can also do this? Such devotees have no desire for material gain. They're conducted by one single desire, to go back to Godhead. And this awaits them in due course on quitting the material body. Because they have the highest aim of life, going back to Godhead, they are never envious of anyone, nor are they proud of being eligible to go back to Godhead. Their only business is to chant and remember the holy name, fame, and pastimes of the Lord, and according to personal capacity, to distribute the message for others' welfare without motive of material gain. So individuals have different capacities. And Krishna just sees the sincerity of the attempt based on these principles. Okay, then it describes, Narada keeps on describing to Srila Vyasadeva how at some he just kept on wandering. He kept on wandering, he kept on doing his service, kept on remembering, kept on singing the glories of Krishna. And then one day, the disappearing hourglass, it appeared. One day, as he was going along, chanting, enthusiastically remembering and chanting, the sand of his life passed to the other side. And it was over. But the verse says, so he went through his life. He didn't stop. He just continued. He continued, but with an increased hankering, with an increased desire to be with Krishna again. It was natural. It was fully spontaneous because he had that taste. And then one day, his time was over. And then the verse said, O Vyas, Narada is speaking, and so, O Brahmana Vyas, in due course of time, I, who was fully absorbed in thinking of Krishna, and who therefore had no attachments on the material level, being completely freed from all material taints, met with death. As lightning and illumination occur simultaneously. As lightning and illumination, the bolt of lightning appears and the light itself appears at exactly the same time. So similarly, Narada dropped his material body and assumed his true spiritual form instantaneously. Because he inside was the same. He was ready for that. He was developing that because that was his desire. He had cultivated that spiritual desire. Interesting, the term Prabhupada used, he met with death. He met with death. Another devotee met with death, named Dhruva Maharaj, and he stepped upon the head of death to enter into the flower airplane that had come to take him to Vaikuntha. Death had become his stepping stone for the spiritual world. The ideal life of a perfected devotee. Okay. We'll stop here. Let us look over here in this direction. Vrindavan is calling us. Let us take our steps in this direction. Unless the goal is ascribed, there is no question of a journey. Unless we know where we're going. We have to live our life. Some lives are complicated. Some are simple. Some people are complicated. Some people are simple. But the goal has to be ascribed. and we have to walk. We are not alone. We have the guidance of Shastra. We have the guidance of the devotees. We have the friendship and support of the devotees. Without the friendship and support of devotees, life is very lonely and difficult. We have the holy names. There is no restriction. There is no restriction on where we should chant the holy names. It's meant for all times and all circumstances, and the holy names of Krishna. We have holy places, such as this holy place right here. We have Radha Gopinath Mandir. And I remember last year when I went to Radha Gopinath Mandir and spent, I don't remember how long, but some days, and I had just come from Vrindavan, staying in Vrindavan for some days, and I felt that I was in Vrindavan the whole time. It's so sweet, so powerful, and here, spiritual world, and we should turn our homes into the spiritual world, and we should just go from one point of the spiritual world to another, passing through our office. Sometimes we keep our eye very strictly pointed on our spiritual goal. And sometimes it seems so far away we can get very depressed only thinking about the goal. And then then we have to look back also and see where we've come from. Because sometimes that seems very far away, so we have to look back and see how far we've come also. And also, like when we're driving a car, raise your hand if you personally are a driver, drive a car, your own car or anything like that, yeah. You always have to keep your mind on where you're going, and I think you made the point, Pyari, Prabhu, that it happened. Was that you who mentioned it happens automatically? You get in the car, and you don't. And if you're not, we don't recommend this in Bombay, but but somehow or another, and it also happens when you're walking. You just sort of tell yourself where you're going to end up, and then you just end up there if it's a familiar road. Like that. But really, when you're driving a car, you've put your mind on the goal, but then you really have to keep your mind not exactly on where the wheels are of your car, where exactly where you are, but a little bit ahead. I find that's how one drives. You keep your mind a little bit ahead of where you're going. So we should understand how to move us closer to where we want to go. And anyways, so many wonderful points were spoken by Narada Muni himself about himself and by Srila Prabhupada in his purports. So we'll end this series of lectures right now, but what I would like you to do before we break is to take for prasadam, just take a 5-minute writing on one particular point. And the one particular point I would like you to write about is what you would like to practically take with you. What you can practically take, not instead of what you would like to practically take with you, what can you practically take with you? Just 5 minutes on that. And okay, is it clear what it is? What from what you've heard and learned and experienced during your time here, what will you practically take with you? If anything. But no one can take my little timer with you. Please. his mind to watch all the time. Keep the pen moving, though, for 5 minutes. And then it's time for prasadam. it's over. Okay, so now it's time for prasadam. I think there's a light prasadam. And then we'll meet here again at 10:30. And then we'll speak, just conclude things till 11:30. And then take full prasadam, if that's all right. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Narayana Muni ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Nitai Gaur Bhaktivinoda ki jai, Sisi Radha Gopinath Bhaktivinoda ki jai.